Ever wondered who and what is shaping Luxembourg? This is your Lux Unplugged podcast with your hosts, Adrian and Thierry.
Hi, I'm Adrian. Welcome to another episode of the Lux Unplugged podcast. In this iteration, we focus on the immobility subject, which is electrifying the automotive world. This topic, vital for both the environment and Luxembourg's economy, is steering conversation towards sustainable transportation solutions. We are leading up to a roundtable on March 20th, organized by the Luxembourg Chamber of Commerce, which is dedicated to exploring e-mobility adoption from the corporate perspective. In anticipation of this significant event, Thierry and I get together with Jerry Wagner, spokesperson at Luxembourg's House of Automobile, who will also be a participant in this upcoming roundtable discussion. Jerry brings invaluable insights into the shift towards electric vehicles, the challenges of e-mobility infrastructure, and the broader impact on legislation and, of course, the automotive market in general. To complement this piece, we also recommend our listeners to flick through the latest Chamber of Commerce ANT publication, or Actualité et Tendance, that goes through this complex topic in much more detail. Links will be provided in the show notes. Throughout our conversation, Jerry emphasizes the importance of a realistic approach to e-mobility adoption, balancing enthusiasm with practicality to ensure the transition benefits all stakeholders without disrupting the economy. He shares his thoughts on the future of electric vehicles in Luxembourg, especially in light of the recent government change. This multifaceted discussion illuminates the road ahead for Luxembourg, shedding light on how businesses, policymakers, but also individuals can navigate the challenges linked to phased eco-mobility adoption, whilst balancing the needs of each and everyone. But now, without further ado, please enjoy our conversation with Jerry Wagner, spokesperson at Luxembourg's House of Automobile.
Jerry, thank you for joining us here today on the Lux Unplugged podcast.
Thank you for having me today.
So for people who don't know you, how would you introduce yourself?
Yes, from a professional standpoint, I could say that I work for almost 20 years now for Arval. Arval, which is the operational leasing company of the BNP Paribas Group. And I have been for almost 16 years general manager for Arval in Luxembourg. And today I work for the corporate in Paris, where I'm in charge of the public affairs for Arval Group. In this assignment, I follow mainly European legislation and try to give some professional input before this legislation is finally drafted. So, and also I'm active still today in Luxembourg as Speaker of the House of Automobile. From my background, I can say that I had, before joining Arval, I worked in several positions in banks and insurances in Luxembourg, of course, banks and insurances. And I have an MBA from the IAE in Nancy, and also a degree in computer science from the University of Luxembourg.
Did you know that you'd be ending up in car leasing or in the car leasing space when you started out as a youngster?
Not that young anymore. I started a bit later, so I had half of my career almost done, or a big part of my career almost already done in banking and insurances before joining the automotive sector.
And in the automotive sector, obviously, you do need finance and you need insurance. So you can combine your experiences from both sectors into a merged one, and that's car leasing.
Mm-hmm. And it was quite a nice move, since car leasing is heavily linked, of course, to cars, selling cars or providing cars for company mostly. And it's been the first time that I really had to sell or to offer a real product, cars. Before, it was accounts, savings, bonds, insurances. And now, first time that's really a sexy product.
A tangible asset.
Right.
Mind you, if you, supposedly when you have a financial product, you gain value over time, right? But if you have a product that relates to a car, presumably a car loses value with time. Right. So what's the distinction here? Well, how do you see things in that sense? You know, coming from the banking sector, finance sector, where things are supposed to gain in value. And here's a bit the opposite.
Indeed, are losing value each year, each month, each mileage you have. Still, it's something people have a much more affection towards it than to some financial service. And not everybody is just interested in money and having financial products and having gains. Sometimes you also have to spend your money and to have fun with something. Here in the leasing sector, it's more, of course, professional leasing. It's towards companies, but still this part of the product still stays. Like you said, it's more tangible. It's something everybody is interested in. Everybody can, well, also everybody has some kind of opinion towards it. And I must say, we live in a very interesting time space for the moment, since everything is changing. We see big changes coming to the automotive market and to economy in general due to the energy transition, due to electric cars popping up, due to everything that's around the whole ecosystem, which goes around like charging infrastructure, also energy supplies. Those are really some exciting times for the moment.
That's a very good way to introduce our main topic today, because we've invited you onto the show because we have been talking to the Chamber of Commerce, our recent partner that we onboarded earlier this year, to discuss the e-mobility topic, which, again, you will be discussing in more detail at a roundtable in March 20th, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Where you're joined by other members or other guest speakers. So for the audience, ahead of that very exciting event, I recommend to read the ANT publication that the Chamber of Commerce issued earlier this year on the immobility and how Luxembourg can transition to electric vehicles, essentially. If you wouldn't mind, so you mentioned earlier, so you've been involved in the House of Automobile, which you're doing on the side whilst being a representative of the mm-hmm. Arva Group. Can you just give us a brief explanation of what's the role of the House of Automobile in Luxembourg and what is mm-hmm. your mission?
You have in Luxembourg a lot of different federations which work on the automotive sector. And what we wanted to do is to join our forces to be better heard from decision makers, especially from political decision makers, before the take decisions on legislation, or even if we can maybe change some things that have a negative impact on the whole economy linked to cars most of the time. So we joined the Car Makers and Importers Federation in Luxembourg. We joined the Car Dealers Federation and also the Leasing Companies Federation. And we put three of them together under this House of Automobile. And we work quite well together on a lot of different topics, which touch most of the time, all the time, our three interests. We sometimes change, of course, the speaker, and now for the last almost 4 years, I'm the speaker for this House of Automobile. And we have regular meetings with ministries, with ministers, with other federations or associations where we share our concerns and our ideas. And which is a good thing, they listen to us. They don't always do exactly what you want to, but they do listen to us.
And how many members do you have then in Luxembourg?
Yeah, we have these three federations, and those federations have a lot of members. I must say, I don't know exactly, but when you have companies, there should be around 100 companies, I guess, which are involved.
And is it that each of them out of these three, then obviously trying, they have different needs depending on the economy, the time of the year, depending on what their members are willing to discuss or bring to the table? Can that be challenging as well then,
sometimes,
for you?
Sometimes it is, but you have to know that let's start with leasing. Leasing companies, they do especially company car leasing. And the company car market in Luxembourg is today making 61% of all new car registrations. With the company cars, within the company cars, you have a lot of users which are not living in Luxembourg. As you know, Luxembourg is a big country. We have a lot of cross-border workers. There are 1/3 of all the workforce is coming from abroad, each day coming from Belgium, France, and Luxembourg into Luxembourg to work there. And a lot of those people also have company cars, benefit cars most of the time. And this makes that a lot of cars are in the hand of those not resident people. that makes a lot of cars. It's more than 10,000 cars out of 50,000, maybe 20% of all car registrations probably are in the hand of people not living in Luxembourg. And those cars come to the market, in addition to the market, and those cars are bought in Luxembourg. And also all the maintenance is done in Luxembourg, insurances are done in Luxembourg. So company cars really helps the Luxembourg car market to reach their very good results they had in the last years. And so they're important for them. Therefore, we all have the same interest. If the leasing or company car sector is not running well, well, the whole automotive sector is not running well in Luxembourg.
There's a very specific question. I mean, you just said there's a lot of cross-border people coming in. And so it's a bit difficult for me to kind of put those people into the same bucket. But still, from your point of view, how would you define the relationship, you know, the Luxembourgers' relationship with the car in general?
Yeah, it's always said that the Luxembourg relationship to cars is very special or unique, and it's much more pronounced than in other countries, but that's not really the case. Of course, people in Luxembourg, we have some level of wealth where we say, okay, our cars are not the cheapest cars you can buy. But it's the same case in other countries. If you go to Germany, if you go to Belgium, to the Netherlands even, you have the same relationship to cars. You have a lot of nice cars, well-equipped cars, running on the streets, new cars. So it's not just Luxembourg who has a very effective relationship towards cars. It's also the case in other countries around.
So in the context, and talking about mobility, but you know, in our conversation here, how would you define e-mobility from your standpoint?
Yeah, e-mobility is everything that's related to electric cars. For me, full electric cars, but not just cars. It's also bikes, it's quadricycles, it's trucks, light trucks, and heavier trucks. And that is something which is really going well in Luxembourg, I must say, since you see in cars you have more than 20% of all new car registrations are now fully electric, not just hybrid or plug-in, but fully electric. So we're also on the top level of the European countries. And the government is also pushing this a lot. There are incentives you have if you buy electric cars. You have some tax advantages, especially in company cars, again, where you have tax advantages. And therefore, also 3/4 of all new electric cars are sold to companies or leasing companies or other companies. And it's rising. It's not rising as fast as it should be, I must admit.
Okay.
Because to reach targets we have in Luxembourg, we have targets that in 2030, 49% of the cars are supposed to be electric or plug-in hybrids. But we are very, very far from this level, and we will not reach it. That's for sure. But still, it's still growing.
Well, we have seen or heard, you know, around the world a little bit that EV adoption has decreased. If we look at Luxembourg with 20% today, is that a good number? Is that where we should be? Can we do more? Should we adopt faster? What is your viewpoint there?
I think we are on a very nice level, but we should do more. I think we should increase more in the future than we see for the moment. We see really it's slowing down a bit, and it's not just in Luxembourg. It's like you said, it's everywhere in Europe where it's slowing down the progress. And there are many reasons for this. The first thing is people are afraid about even car. It's not the autonomy of car. That's something, okay, that's a false fear. But it's also about what will happen in a couple of years with my car. What shall I do with it? Will I be still able to sell it and at what price? And now when you saw that in the last month, some companies, some car makers like Tesla or even others were brought down their prices for new cars very fast, just to sell more because they have overcapacities for the moment in car production. When you lower the price of the new car, then you lower at the same time the value of the old car if you want to sell it. And that's really a risk people are not willing to take, especially because it's not just this pricing policy, of car makers that is putting them into trouble, but it's also about the evolution of the new technologies. What will be the autonomy of a car in 5 years? Will it be 1,000 kilometers? Now I have only 200. Will I be able to sell it? So they are afraid. And that's, I say, a good thing for the leasing sector, because you see that a lot of companies of cars are going to leasing, and they know that in the operational leasing, at the end of the contract, they do not take over the car, but we take the car back, and it's our problem what we do with it, how we sell it. I say, okay, I'm ready to pay 500, 600, 700 euros, whatever it needs to pay this car for 3 years or 4 years. And then, well, I give the keys back. I take my new car with the new technology. I don't have to worry about it. And that's especially a trend you see in private leasing. Private leasing was not very developed in Luxembourg, even in Western Europe. But now it comes, and most of the private leasing is for electric cars. Because people see, oh, I don't want to take a risk. I take leasing, then I see what's happening in a couple of years.
But that logic applies to even internal combustion engines. Like we mentioned earlier, you know, when we compared financial products versus cars, I mean, your cars are losing value regardless, yes. Right? So I don't understand why people are more afraid of owning an EV compared to a traditional car, where you know that it's deflationary by nature.
But there you know where it goes. You know by experience when you buy some Volkswagen Golf or whatever, and you want to sell it in 3 or 4 years, you know today more or less exactly what you will get when you sell it. Also, in our business, we know quite well how we'll sell our cars. It's because we need to estimate this residual value to fix our pricing. But pricing is buying price, selling price that we need to finance, and that all the services that go along with it, like insurances, repairs, maintenance, tires, whatever you want. The way you make a package with it. And we are pretty good in estimating what it will cost and to fix a price for our customers. In electric cars, you know, we don't have this experience, because we don't know what will this car be worth in 3 or 4 years' time. We also have the same question now. Will there be new cars which make that the old ones are obsolete? Nobody wants them anymore. What are the energy prices in 4 years? There are a lot of things we do not know, although we are professional and we are quite experienced people, but still we don't know. And we made in the past, we lost some money, or we are losing some money for the moment on electric car sales, because we estimate them higher than they are today. For company, it's different. We have more cars, bigger volume, so we can have one gain, one loss, and maybe we'll be okay at the end of the day. But for private persons, they have no idea what the car will be worth. Will I take it? If I want to sell it, what do I get? And that's a risk they don't want to take.
I think in general with electric cars, and I'm an EV driver for well over a year now, and it's one of those things that the unknown is how quickly can you adopt? And it's very quick. You get used to it very quick.
Yes.
And the cost of maintenance is almost non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about how to sell it to individuals that are a little bit more apprehensive to it. But at the same time, if we then looking at countries like Norway, who are obviously often used as a role model for EV adoption and renewable energy in general, and that despite being a heavy fossil fuel economy or producer, how realistic is it for countries to emulate this compared to Norway, as example, for Luxembourg, or even bigger countries like Germany or others?
It's very difficult. Norway is a special case, and you cannot really copy it to other countries. You have Norway was really pushing electric cars. They put a lot of money on the table first, and then they have a lot of clean energy. They have a lot of hydraulic power, wind power, whatever. And the power is quite cheap compared to fuel. That made that it was really, or it's still really interesting for people to drive electric cars in Norway. They reached a very high level of penetration. Now they are stagnating. It will not evolve much more. Also because they dropped a lot of help they wanted to, they paid before. But still the energy is very cheap and you will not be able to reproduce it in other countries in Europe, at least not to this level. And in order to, for electric cars to be really clean car, you need to charge them with green electricity, renewable energy. While if you go further down to the south of Europe, or even worse, if you go to the east of Europe, you will see that the energy mix is not very green. It's very CO2 heavy. Then it makes sense to push electric cars too fast if you have finding more or less the same level of CO2 emission than you have with a conventional ICE car. And then do not forget, the biggest problem is if energy supply in general means you need clean energy and you need to transport the energy to charging point. And this infrastructure problem, it's not solved today in most European countries, and not even in developed countries, not even Luxembourg, where we still have this problem. We can buy some green energy, but to have the energy to the charging station, that's a big problem. It's not just putting a charging station somewhere on the road. It's having the cables, which are thick enough to have all the energy transported. And you need to have transformators that you have to install, which costs really a lot of money, 200,000, 300,000 euro. So that's the problem, is charging infrastructure needs to be made everywhere, and especially in private households. I don't have it for today. If today you have a private house, it's still quite easy to install a wall box for one car. But most people are now living in apartment houses. There you cannot just put wall boxes in. There is not enough energy supply for this housing. And so we see it that people come to us and say, hey, I will really want to have an electric car, but I cannot charge it at home. And if you cannot charge it at home, at least you need to be able to charge it at work. At work, it gets also more complicated with time, because a lot of companies are trying to install wall boxes on their side, but again, they have not the power, enough power on the side to put everything in place. And that means we will reach a level where all people who can have electric cars, which live in private homes, they might have it, but all the other ones, it's very difficult to have them converted to electric cars if they cannot charge.
You said early on, you know, about Norway, that they put a lot of money on the table. Was it the government who put a lot of money on the table for individuals, for private households, to buy electric cars? Or what role did the manufacturers play in the adoption in Norway and now today? If we look at Norway just for a second longer, you know, we have NIO and Tesla there. Tesla, I remember being in Norway, in Oslo, maybe 7-8 years ago. And, you know, I think that was the first place I saw a Tesla driving around. And so is it not where governments have to give, but manufacturers have to give some incentives as well by reducing the cost of the prices? But without, obviously, the problem then is, you know, how do you compete against Chinese manufacturers? As we know, you can buy a BYD car now for $9,000. But we won't get a $9,000 car in Luxembourg or in Europe anytime soon, or of that standard.
Of course, car manufacturers can really play a decisive role in this energy transition. The problem they have is they need to invest huge sums of money for research and development to change their way of working, because it was quite a heavy change for traditional car manufacturers to change towards electric cars. Most of them did it too late or did not put enough energy in it, enough conviction to it. Companies like Tesla and even BYD, they started with electric cars. they had no legacy. They could just start again all over on a green field, which makes it much easier. Still, Tesla had really made a lot of good cars. They had their software is quite well. Their batteries are still ahead of other manufacturers. And they dominated the market. That's why some years ago, 5 years ago, that's 6 years, 7 years, like it's that, the first cars were Tesla cars because they were nice. They were more sexy than other cars. It was not this stupid electric box on wheels. It really hadn't design. So when people had to buy an electric car, they were looking at a Tesla. And still they dominate the market, although others like BYD especially, is getting really big in Europe. They are now the biggest car makers in the world. And they did not exist 15 years ago. So it's quite impressive. But those, I think the manufacturers, they can lower the price. And Tesla did it. Tesla did it last year. They lowered their prices quite significantly. They could do it because they had cars sitting there produced already and they really needed cash. And so they said, okay, we sell them to another price. We will not lose much money on the production of the car because the production of the car is not it's the most expensive part. You have the batteries, of course, but then building the car is not very expensive. You do not take into account all your research and development and advertising, marketing costs and everything, then you can lower it. And they can sell it without losing money on that same car, on one car. But on the long term, they cannot continue with this. And then they have to raise cars again. Other companies are following, trying to be cheaper. But what is really the consequence to it is that European car makers are behind the market, that you have to say it's their fault. You have to say it also. But on the other hand, we now open the doors to all these Chinese car makers, the American Tesla, and they will just invade our market, which will mean that traditional car makers are going even down, more down than before, and that this is very bad news for the whole economy because everything that's linked to this car making industry is quite important. And we get more and more dependent with this from Chinese manufacturers. Still, we are very dependent concerning batteries, and now we'll get very dependent also for the car. Like, don't forget, Tesla is building their cars in China.
And Germany.
Some in Germany, yes. Yeah. But most of them in China.
Yeah.
But you have also European car maker. Like Dacia is also built in China. China, Dacia Spring, one of some big volume cars. It's for cost reasons, and I can understand. In China, the cost for worker on the production line is 1/5 of the cost in the European company. And then they have other constraints when they build a factory. So it's not always good news for environment if cars are manufactured in China.
That's exactly what I wanted to ask as a follow-up question. China is known for not just cars. It's been like that for solar panels. It's been like that for many components where they've dominated the market. But going back to electric cars, it's a known thing that NIO, as Thierry mentioned earlier, BYD and others, they've been flooding the market. So they've got a huge excess of cars. Because I think those manufacturers probably, which we haven't mentioned so far, is they get lots of state aid from the government to overproduce. And as you said, Jerry, that there's no consideration for the environment, and probably they must be using a lot of coal to melt the steel, to rework it and so forth. And then, of course, you know, once you've got the finished product, then it's probably like way cheaper than compared to standards if you had applied it to European manufacturers. So my question is, you know, more again as a representative of the House of Automobile and someone who's defending the industry, are you not defending the industry by saying there's anti-competitiveness behaviors happening from the Chinese, which I think is the stance of many governments? You know, they know that it's going to cost lots of employment to many of local industrial players. Well, how do you defend the European industry if there's any position here?
I think we should give the European car makers a bit more time to adjust to the market. You know that we have in European Union a lot of initiatives which are really pushing electric cars. You have this deadline 2035, where you're not allowed to sell ICE cards anymore. There's also other targets which you prepare for company car. They really want to push very hard. Still, the companies in general are not ready. Like I said, it's partly their fault. Huh? It's not nothing to say about that, but we need to pay attention how fast we are pushing this transition forward. Because if the European economy cannot follow by building cars, by offering cars to reasonable prices, then we need to look somewhere else and people have to turn towards Chinese or other foreign cars. You have another problem is all this infrastructure I mentioned before. If you want all the countries in Europe to have the infrastructure ready, just to have hundreds of millions of hundreds of thousands of cars, which are electric per country, they do not have the power, the possibility, the financial power to create this infrastructure. Even here in Luxembourg, we don't have all the financial means to build the infrastructure we need. And if you go further down in countries, like if you go to Greece, you go to Italy, you go to Poland, you know, wherever, they cannot just say, we don't use IC cars anymore, we just have electric cars. They are not ready for it. So this one-fits-all solution for Europe to have everywhere electric cars does not work at all. And this will bring economy down a lot of places. And I must say the European Union is also, say that there is a problem that needs to be resolved. And they will do not push too hard anymore, but still they have not changed their targets. And what is needed that we give a bit of chance to this European economy and that, we should do like other countries do, like the US do, and put some special tariffs on imported cars.
Overall, you know, we want to, or we have to reduce carbon emission. And if we need to give manufacturers maybe more time, but also the countries more time in terms of coming up with investment strategies for, you know, producing the additional products for the electric grid, would it be worth just pushing, 2035, maybe back forward another 5 years? Or what can happen? Where do we sit there?
It's difficult. You cannot just say, the 35 target is too soon, and then we push it to 40 or 45 or whatever. It will not solve the problem. I agree with you. But I'm never very fond of this 100% targets. Mm-hmm. I think everybody needs to be electric by a certain date. It does not make sense because you have other problems that come with it because you have people which do not fit in it. It's by the usage, because they do not have any chance to have charging system. And don't forget, if you push too hard in one direction, people will not be happy. You can say, but people need to adjust. But they will not adjust. They will adjust their government. That's what you saw in Europe last year. In a lot of countries, where especially the Green Parties, which were pushing very hard for electrification and other things, people said, no, I don't want somebody to tell me what car I need to buy or to force me to buy something, because people need time to adjust to it. And they said, no, I don't want this government anymore. We change. And then you saw in a lot of countries, in Luxembourg, first one, Germany, Netherlands, France, so everywhere, the ecologist parties were losing. And they were replaced by other governments. So if you try to push very hard, you will end up that nobody is pushing anymore, because no government wants to risk to not be reelected anymore. So we need to, and then nobody wins. Environment doesn't win with this. So we need to have realistic targets, and we need to put in place a system that allow people to adapt to change. And we don't have to have 100% of electric cars. If we have 80% of electric cars, we win a lot. This 20% more is not very important. I just for an example, there is some reflection about forcing company cars to be all electric, even by 2028. So there are each year around 10, 11 million company cars in Europe, which are newly registered. So if you change now, even the park, if you say all company cars, compare them, if all company cars today are purely ICE cars, and you change them, all of them, all together for next day to be electric, fully electric cars, what is the gain in CO2 emission? And if you take into account also energy mix, because electric cars, don't forget, they have also CO2 emission while driving, because the electricity is not CO2 free. And if you take really official figures from the European Union, from even ecologists, association, whatever, really figures, you will find out that the gain in CO2 per year is 0.7% of all CO2 emissions of Europe. Okay, you can say better to gain 0.7% than gaining nothing. But with all the risks by pushing too fast, you have on ecological impact, on economical impact, political impact, whatever. And that does not make sense. For this small gain have so much risk. We need to go that way, there's no doubt. But we need to do it on the intelligent way.
Can I ask? I mean, it's my personal belief, but I'm going to ask the question to you, Jerry, as well. I personally think that the public has been misled by public life. Not necessarily because it was intentional, but I think because politicians were not sufficiently informed about the consequences of what it means to electrify an economy within such a short period of time. What is your view here? Do you think that things could have been done in a more informed manner?
Yeah, I think most people, politicians included, were really not aware what this means to go fully electric. On the other hand, if they had known before what it means, they probably would have not done anything. So you cannot say, I don't do anything because I know there are some problems with it. You have to do it again some way, but not too fast again. You have to think what's happening. And this was not done. It was a lot of countries. You had mostly green parties who said, yeah, we have to go for it. And now we tell everybody, you have to change, and then people have to change, because if you don't tell them that they have to change, they will never change. Okay, now they get the result of it. They are not there anymore because they put too fast, too hard. Now we need to find solutions to it. Yes, people were misled because the thinking was too simple. Take an electric car, charge it at home or on the public station, and then everything is fine. But people do not think that way. People don't want change. If you force them to change, they will refuse and do everything. They refuse all arguments. So it puts everybody in a bad situation. And of course, all this cost for infrastructure. Well, I know a lot of people said, yeah, no problem. We have all the energy. We have all the charging stations. But they don't work. If you do not have charging stations at home, people, they do not want to have an electric car. If they had charging point at home, they come home, they can plug in whenever they want easily, then it's fine. Once they have it, they will not change. Once you have an electric car and you see the comfort that you have all around with it, you don't have to get gas anymore. If it's raining or cold outside, you go drive home, you plug in, and then you're happy for the next day. This is all the difficulties. People will not change once they use it, but you need to get them to use it.
It's the change at the beginning that is a bit. I remember my first day in my electric car, figuring out where to charge and download the app, to connect. But afterwards, it was fine. I mean, I just recently moved house. So my house where I'm living in now doesn't have a wall box, not yet. I'm installing one. So I'm just connecting to the normal plug. It's obviously not charging as fast, you know, it needs a long time. But then again, it's all about planning. And most a bit more high spec cars and most electric cars are all very high spec with what comes in. So a Tesla, if I drive 400 kilometers, 500 kilometers, he tells me where to stop to charge.
Mm-hmm.
To me, obviously for those who are not driving, it's a non-problem.
I can just confirm what you say. Also, when you have to travel further. Okay, if you say I want to go every weekend somewhere on the ocean, burn my weekend house, and it's 500 kilometers to go there. Yeah. It's not the best solution to do it with electric cars because you want to go fast and then you have to stop twice maybe. Okay, I agree. But for all the rest, it's no problem. And even if I go to Paris, to Frankfurt, whatever, I charge once on my way there. And it's nice because it's after 2 hours, 2-3 hours driving. I just take a coffee, have a look at my mails, and then I go on. That's it. And the charging stations are getting better and better. The network is getting better and better.
But that brings me to a more forward-looking question, because we established EVs will be particularly deflationary over time, which will make it easier for people to adopt it, even for those that have been suspicious to make the move. Hopefully there'll be more infrastructure to accommodate all those people that will jump the gun. And of course, the energy mix. Well, I was going to ask a question about nuclear energy, because I still think nuclear energy is probably the only self-sufficient energy means for any major region, actually, not just Europe and Luxembourg, but anyone who wants to be fully electrified needs to have baseload energy, as they call it. But from your point of view, Géry, we've just had, as you mentioned, elections in Luxembourg. So we've got a new government in for hopefully the next 5 years. And maybe they will stay around for the next following years. How do you see then Luxembourg evolving? You know, now that we've just gotten rid of the Green Party, they've gone back to a two-party coalition. What is your take on the future in Luxembourg when it comes to e-mobility?
I think that Luxembourg is for the moment on the right track. The new government is taking a much more realistic approach to the problem. There was yesterday with the Minister of Environment, talking about bonuses for electric cars, what we should do to have a higher penetration of electric cars. And I told him also some things I told you today about that we have to take really care about the pace in which we are progressing, not mess it up. And he was really listening. There was quite a difference between the Green Party. Before the Green Party, also, I would say, well, some people were really listening and trying to have a more realistic approach, but it was difficult in their coalition to really, or in their party, to get it done that way, but they pushed always a bit too hard. With the new government, I think they really want to succeed. They want to succeed in the transition without putting the economy at risk. And this is a change in the approach, which is very important for me. And if they keep on doing things like they started now, I think they will get it done, and they will get it done a much better way than before. But it's early. The new government is in place for, what is it, 3-4 months now. We see what will be in the next 6 months. But for the moment, I'm quite optimistic.
And in general terms, obviously, our podcast is about Luxembourg, as we just mm-hmm. alluded to. And what else would you change if you could? Not just about e-mobility, but in general, not selling more cars, of course. But
I don't know. I sometimes really ask myself. It's always easy to criticize somebody and say government is doing not well. They should do better. They should. But when I'm honest with myself and say, yeah, what would you do, please? I do not have the solutions either. Yeah, sometimes some things where they, you could do it a bit different. You could put more attention to this one, to that one. But there's so many topics. You have to select some. And of course, they always select the topic you don't want them to select because they think your topic is much more important than the other one. So, but if I was a minister, I don't know what I really would change. They are not perfect. For the moment, like I said, I think they are on the right track.
I'm sure at least people will not have to worry about the prices of their EV car over time. So at least that will be more affordable than housing in contrast. But Jerry, well, thanks so much for taking the time to speak to us today. It was very enriching. And again, in the interest of time, we would have covered many more topics. But I hope that's enough of a taster for the audience to prepare for the roundtable, as mentioned earlier, the roundtable that you'll be participating in on the 20th of March.
Well, thanks very much for both of you. It was very interesting. It was a pleasure for me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Luxembourg's Leading Business Podcast. If you're listening to our show on Apple Podcasts, please rate our program using the 5-star scale and leave us a review. Or if you're tuning into Spotify, it takes just a few seconds to give us a rating on the overview page of our show. You can also email us with your feedback or suggestions at info@luxunplugged.com.